So did that for a few years, and then AEP bought them. And I worked for, that's when I started working for AEP in 2006 is when I worked for AEP. And worked for those folks for, but right after I got, they bought us, and I went to work for AEP, it was right after Katrina. So I guess it was 05, the fall of 05. And they needed pilots in New Orleans, because there weren't anybody. They were all gone. They couldn't find any of the people that ran the boats. So they stood up this operation in Convent, Louisiana, and I went down there and worked and liked it, and moved my family from West Virginia, Huntington, from Barboursville, West Virginia, to right outside of Baton Rouge in a town called Gonzales, Louisiana, and lived in Gonzales and worked in the fleets and learned that whole culture of a completely different way of handling boats than what I'd seen.
Right.
Down there, they headline barges and do the tier fleeting, and really odd way of doing it compared to the rest of the way I'd seen on all the other river systems, you know, and learned that.
So each river system has its own...
Their own little style, but, well, especially New Orleans, not so much everywhere else. Oh. Everywhere else, there's techniques and stuff that you may see, but not what's called headlining. They headline barges with one line, mm-hmm. not two lines, or face up. You know, they would just take one line, pull this barge out, pull it up alongside of them, go up the river with it on their side. It's really, when I say odd, it's odd if you compare the rest of the river industry, the western rivers to that, or the inland waters to it. It's a different little way. And it's because of the way that the engineers designed the fleets. A man named Richard Wright designed those fleets. And they're tiers. They're just one long and like eight or nine wide, and they're all stacked in there together. It's sort of like when you go and you have some, and you get a valet service, and they take your keys and they go park your car, and they let you go back and see where they park your cars, and they're like jammed in here. They're like a maze of cars. They may have to move 10 cars to get yours out. Kind of the same philosophy down there. Maximum amount of barges in a minimal amount of space.
Sure.
So it calls pilots to learn how to yank these barges out. Yeah. So I started doing that, and I was real successful with it. And AEP thought enough of me to make me a port captain, and I become a port captain in at Convent, Louisiana.
So you came shoreside. Did you think about doing that when your son was born? I mean, you worked out a way where you could be home at night. But...
Those jobs just didn't exist in Appalachia.
Okay.
You just didn't. Yeah. If you were a really good boat captain, they'd never let you off a boat. And I don't think that's what happened at AEP. I think that they saw leadership and because we got to understand there was like a whole group of us Ohio Valleyans or hillbillies. I'll call them hillbillies because affectionately I'm one of them. So affectionately I say hillbillies. We all came down in one big group, and I was the king of the hillbillies, I guess, or the leader of the hillbillies. And we had our own. And I brought a lot of guys with me when I came down there. Probably five or six other captains that wanted an opportunity to work for one of these premier towing companies, because you couldn't get a job like that up here. Because you got to understand the world in the High Valley, especially Paducah North, it's hard. I mean, it was in the 80s and 90s, they talk about how hard it is now. I think it was much harder to exist and live in those days.
In general, not just the river.
Yeah, because I think that you have to look at the country as a whole. They were leaving the whole industrial mindset. You know, the steel mills were closed, and all the songs that Billy Joel wrote about, Allentown, Pennsylvania was closing steel mills. It was so the country was changing from this industrial society into a more technology driven or whatever it is. So that was a tough time to figure out what you wanted to do, because, you know, when I was growing up, it was like, get a job at the steel mill like your grandpa did, and you'll live happy, and you'll get your white picket fence, and everything will be great.
Right.
And it was the complete opposite of that. I felt like I was smart enough to go to college, but I didn't go because my girlfriend at the time got pregnant with our daughter, and she's now 26 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I chose to go on the river, and she went to college. And the promise was when she got out of college, I'd go back to college. Well, I never went, obviously, or I wouldn't be sitting here having this interview with you.
Right.
So it's odd, the decisions you make as a young man changes the whole route of your whole life.
Right.
So it's so important to do it when you're probably the least capable or mentally ready to do it.
True.
It's odd how it works.
That's true, yeah.
But in this case, it worked out well. But, you know, I don't, you know, people say, well, you're really successful. I think I'm not really so much successful as I am. I was driven by hunger, real hunger. You know, the looming threat of I'm not going to be able to feed my children and my wife. And I had to go. We were nomads, you know. The coal industry would fluctuate and I would be laid off for a month. And then the coal boom, it was like riding this coal boom. And the country didn't know what to do. But anyways,